Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory back again. Not going to get into all the gibberish on where we've been, where we're going. I just want to hit on these finals. It's good to be back, guys. Good to see the chat loaded up. Monday's going to be a solo edition here on Dome Theory. So we're going to talk some finals. We're going to talk Sam Cassell. We're going to talk a lot of stuff. We'll do a Q&A at the end, too, for those of you in the chat. Stay on board for that. If you want to throw some questions out there, feel free. But these finals, let's get right into it. Nuggets, Heat, I'm not going to lie. I go into this series a week ago, Celtics lose Game 7. Leaves a sour taste in everybody's mouths. I mean, I thought we were about to cover the finals again here at CLNS Media, and all of a sudden Tatum goes down on the first play, things go awry, they score 20 points or whatever it was in the first quarter, something ridiculous like that, and they're on their way to a blowout loss in Game 7 at home, and I think everybody's still feeling the shock of that a little bit. This Sam Cassell hire was the first moment I think everybody started to feel a little better about things, but you're looking at it, and this is how I felt last year. I was in Miami. I go down the media room. I'm getting ready to record the trophy ceremony. The Celtics are up 8 on the Heat. Of course, there's the rematch this year between the Celtics and Heat. And I see Butler pulling up for 3 when I get down the media room. I'm like, what just happened? Pretty much right as I arrived in the room, I'm seeing him pull up for 3 for the win. And what I'm thinking in that moment is, and really throughout that series, because, of course, the Celtics squandered the Game 6 at home before that and had to go down to Miami for the Game 7. You're just thinking, do we really want to watch Warriors Heat? Tyler Hero's hurt. Numerous other Heat were banged up last year, too. And it's like, man, if the Heat win this series, the Warriors are just going to blow through them. We're not going to have a finals again. I still dread those years where it was Cavs on one side, great Cavs teams, at least the first one in 17, and those Kevin Durant Warriors teams on the other side. And it's like, all right, here we go. 4 games and we're out of here. It's the offseason. The playoffs have been so great in recent years, and we've had some great finals too. 2021, I thought last year was really good, Celtics Warriors, up until the last couple games there. And I'm sitting here watching this Game 7 a week ago, and I'm like, all right, Nuggets Heat. We had Lakers-Celtics potential, which I've kept telling everybody would have been an event. Maybe the rivalry's not there, but when you put LeBron and Boston together, when you put the Celtics and Lakers together, there's always going to be that allure. It almost happened in 2020. Nearly happened this year. I'm not going to say it was close because the Lakers got swept, but the Celtics make that 3-0 comeback, and you at least get Celtics-Nuggets, which I think would have been an interesting matchup, even if you didn't feel great about the Celtics, particularly a banged-up Celtics team themselves by that point, competing with a deep-loaded Denver team with a powerful point of attack at the center position where the Celtics showed to be a little weak late in the playoffs. Heat surprised me. Game 2, an incredible game. And say what you want about how the league might have felt about this matchup or fans, particularly casual fans, and even myself to some degree. I'm not going to lie. I didn't catch a ton of Game 1. I had to go back and watch it after. Game 2, I'm sitting there as the Heat give up that 40-14 run. And I'm like, here we go. 2-0. Denver's off to the races. Just steal a game in Miami. And this is over. Maybe the Heat steal a game by the end of it. But Miami showed me something again. You all know from the Garden Report how I feel about these Heat. I don't get them. I don't believe in them. I don't think they're that fun to watch. I don't think the individual talents across the board are particularly great. And even though I have all the respect for Eric Spoelstra in the world, it's like a zone, this handoff offense, this pick and roll with Jimmy and Bam that hasn't looked great at times, that the Celtics really solved in that Game 7. But I was looking at this earlier. One of those Kevin Durant teams, the Warriors, of course, that I mentioned earlier, the amount of threes that they hit during one of those runs and the amount of threes that Gabe Vincent and Max Strus and those Miami role players have hit during this run are comparable, and the finals aren't even over yet. I mean, that group of role players on the Heat are going to hit more threes during this finals run than those Golden State teams. And the three-point shooting here is astonishing. And they're not relying on it to a large degree. I've heard the conversation that, oh, look at the Celtics. They're jacking threes, and the Heat, they're doing going inside, and they're getting Bam the ball, and they're doing this and that. The Heat are relying on the three. You know, they're not putting it up at the volume that the Celtics are, but the timeliness of these shots, particularly the Duncan Robinson ones right out of halftime, it's incredible how they've kept up this pace throughout the playoffs here, shooting 50% from three in key spots again and again. They do it last night. And so they're, as much as anyone, even the Celtics, testing, can this three-point shot as an equalizer? And it's just one part of their team dynamic. We can get into the differences. But being able to shoot at a high percentage in key games here is really carrying this team. And I think their offense is fun to watch. The more I watch it and the more I see it at its most successful here in the playoffs, I know a lot of Heat fans are saying, we don't know what we're watching right now. This isn't what we were watching in January. And I think there's going to be a larger conversation if they win it all about what changed, because this was a team that was dead in the fourth quarter of the play-in game against the Bulls after losing the first play-in game to the Hawks. So they're running this movement offense. The defense, yes, it's a 2-3 zone, but at times it's a 2-2-1. It's morphing. Guys are switching high-low. There's a lot of components that make it a complicated zone, I think, to read. I mean, if Nikola Jokic is attacking it head-on and drawn into some of the mistakes that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown made, I think there's a conversation to be had at this point about maybe the Heat being the team that caused a lot of the Celtics issues rather than self-inflicted wounds on the Celtics end. Now, certainly, even though Miami shot, I think it was 10% or something over their expected field goal percentage in that series, the Celtics still had leads in games one and two that they shouldn't have squandered. And so I think that's still the story of that series, is the Celtics killing themselves, but the Heat deserve all the credit in the world, and I'm going to give it to them. I mean, this is a team I thought was going to come apart at midseason. I didn't see the potential for quite a few of these players. Duncan Robinson got lost. Now he's cutting to the basket, finding opportunistic lanes, and look back at the East Finals. He's beating Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart on cuts. I mean, this guy's rise and the way he saved the game in game two is incredible. Then we got to get to, and of course, Butler's at the center of all this. Bam is a grinder, a player I really love, a defensive, versatile big who's as adaptable as they come on that end to different matchups, different parts of the zone. They give up that key rebound, though. I know he was at the right side boxing out, but they give up that one to Jokic that he fires out to the right wing for Murray three, and it's like, here we go. Nuggets are about to steal this anyway, and I thought he got a good shot off from the left wing on that final possession. He ends up missing it, and he escaped. And you saw Butler walking off the court, just so relieved, taking the mouthpiece off. But the guy I do want to give some credit, because I think across the board, the individual players here, they're not great. You even have some guys struggling, like Kevin Love and Kyle Lowry, where it's like, how are these guys even out here right now? Cody Zeller is out there getting torched by Jokic. But they play together, and there's a connectivity that I think, of course, Butler deserves credit for. Of course, Bam deserves credit for, and that coaching staff. But Gabe Vincent, this is the guy who deserves an apology more than anyone else for me. I see him go down in game four down in Miami there, and at that moment, I'm like, something's happening here. Heat already thin to begin with. Celtics pull off this great second half where they're firing the ball around, producing quality shots, and they get a nice win on the road, get it to 3-1. They're going home, and it's like, all right, if Vincent's going to miss some time here, the Celtics have a door open, and he misses game five. Celtics win it easily, but he gets out there for game six, which I'm sure wasn't easy given the bad-looking ankle turn, and we've seen Butler go through it now. We've seen Tatum go through it, and we saw what it did to their games. Well, Butler in games, I mean, Vincent rather in game six. I'm pulling up the playoff log for him now. Goes out there and gives only 2 points, 0-for-2 shooting, but he's out there. And then game seven, he's out there. And I thought he was incredible last night against Denver. And they got all the support in the world for him. They don't even want to talk about the undrafted story and the two-way contract he signed and UC Santa Barbara and all that. The whole story you're going to read if they win the championship here. But this is what I got to acknowledge. And I think this is what everybody's got to acknowledge with him. And they call him Nnamdi, which I discovered was his middle name. You know, sort of emblematic if you're hearing that and not knowing of how overlooked this Heat team has been all year. Even at this point, even after upsetting the Celtics and the Knicks and the Bucks. In the playoffs, 14 points per game, 4 assists per game, shooting 41% from 3 on 6 attempts. 90% at the line, 43 from the field. And they rave about his playmaking. And you see it. He's in command when he needs to be on the ball. He's explosive. He hits the kickout threes. Butler had that great baseline drive where he hit him above the break for a huge three in that game, second half. Gabe Vincent's good. And I started to realize that a little bit during the Olympics. And you know I love the international game if you've all made these international tournaments. The World Cup's coming up this summer. Get ready for some podcasts about that. Vincent's good. He's good. He's not one of these guys on this Heat roster you look at and say, man, how is he doing that? This is Gabe Vincent at this point. And yeah, is he playing a little bit above his level? Probably. But this guy, if you're ignoring him, and the Celtics did it all series, he's going to make you pay. And that's what the Heat have done. They've made you pay for overcompensating. They've made you pay for paying too much attention to Butler, paying too much attention to Bam. These other guys are going to shake loose, whether it's Robinson, whether it's Vincent, whether it's Strus, who went 0-for-10 in game one and bounced back. Are they going to win this series? I still say no. But who am I to say at this point? I've picked against them in every one so far. And if they win, best story, most surprising finals winner ever in my mind. I looked through it a little bit earlier. I texted Nick Gelso, and it's interesting. Some of the replies I've gotten, you can throw yours in there too if you want. 06 Heat. Who I don't frankly remember. I was probably getting into sports around 07, 08. Dwayne Wade, Shaquille O'Neal, loaded roster. They were second in the East, you know, 12 games behind the Pistons. Going up against this great Mavericks team that I think a lot of people expected to win that series. So you put that up there with the great finals upsets ever. Yeah, absolutely. But I'm talking about the whole run. I don't care that Giannis gets hurt. It's a factor. I mean, the Heat probably don't win that series if he doesn't get hurt, but who knows? He comes back, and they're winning games with him on the floor still, and they went 4-1. Still can't believe the Bucks squandered that game 5. That's still the most impressive thing to me in this whole run, because that's before you have the belief. You're still that 8 seed in round 1. And they just blow through the 1 seed. Round 2, Butler gets hurt. You win without him. And then you just breeze through the series. And I know Randall had the surgery and all that. But still, an incredible upset, the manner in which they did it. And then the Celtics series. Taking the 3-0 lead. Making this team fall apart by game 3. Basically forcing them to the brink of turmoil, quitting, whatever you want to say, in that game 3. Overcoming 2 fourth quarter comebacks. And yeah, I see the 99 Knicks. I'm talking champions. Is this going to be, if the Heat win this, the most unlikely NBA champion ever? It's an incredible story for the direction of the league. if you like the parity, if you like teams like this emerging, you know, maybe an Isaiah team, an Isaiah Celtics team could have emerged in the direction this league's heading. And we'll get into all the CBA talk in time. If you want to check out how the CBA is going to start to impact the league and create parity and break up teams and all that, I wrote about it for Boston Sports Journal, and you can check that out. But there's a lot to love about this finals and the possibility of the Heat winning it, at least making it competitive here and giving us something to watch and talking about. I mean, I certainly wouldn't have been talking about these finals if the Heat didn't do what they did last night and closing it. It's a great, great story. And the Nuggets, I'm captivated by them too. I was one of these Jokic guys who said, I didn't mean this against him. When's he going to get a little bit of heat for not winning? You know, all of these stars throughout the years, they've gotten that heat. And I don't think it's right in a lot of cases. I think Giannis particularly got hit real hard after the bubble, and then turned it around and won the next year. You never heard it with Jokic, though. Do some disappointing exits. I get the roster and all that. The roster they had this year, he had a win. And the way they breezed through the West, the way he was putting up 30, 10, and 10 like it was nothing. This is Wilt Chamberlain stuff we're seeing from this guy on the stat sheet. And the impact's real, and the defense improved. He's struggled a little bit handling the pick and roll in this series, but overall he's come a long way on that end. Aaron Gordon, a great 2021 trade, I think it was, where they sent Gary Harris down to Orlando, and I think a pick, maybe two, just swiped him from Orlando and put him in a position to succeed here next to Jokic. Same with Bruce Brown. Same with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Two guys who were excellent role players on Lakers and Nets teams that were competing for championships that just slipped through the cracks. Bad Westbrook trade in KCP's case. The Nets pretty much let Brown go, a favorite of mine who I actually wanted on an MLE last summer, but that's a different story. And Jeff Green, Uncle Jeff Green from those Celtics teams 10 years ago, the vet in this series. I saw him get asked compared to Udonis Haslem. I think that's going a little old on, you know, Uncle Jeff, but he embraced it. It's cool seeing him out there. And he had a cool story to tell about how KG inspired him to get more vocal. And now he's a very vocal player who's constantly talking out there. And I see that for real. He was definitely I'd say, more concealed player on those early Celtics teams that I was getting into at the time. Yeah, Nick Joso told me this earlier, who runs our Legends account, 6869 Celtics, unlikely given the regular season they had, Bill Russell's final run. But in recent history, I mean, this Heat team would be, I think, unprecedented in terms of unlikeliness. I mean, no one, not a single person in the universe even had them on their radar as a champion this year, particularly coming out of the playoffs. But I love the Nuggets. Jeff Green, shout out to him. A guy who, you know, heart surgery and all the rest, didn't reach his prime potential, I'd say, in Boston. So for him to just become a piece of it on this Nuggets team, a veteran leader, a guy who can give you a few minutes. I think that's why a lot of people wanted him in Boston a year or two ago when he was in free agency and the Nuggets got him on a two-way deal. So there's the finals. Ramonis Shelburne, by the way, got lit up by Spoelstra post-game, and it did bring back some nightmares for me. Here's the clip of her and making, I think, an astute observation that the Heat tried to lure Jokic into being a scorer, but Spoelstra didn't want to give that point up to him, didn't want to give that inspiration to the Nuggets. And I think in some way didn't want to understate what the Heat did in that game. So he came at her hard. Here was that moment last game.
Final question on the left.
Hey, Coach. Ramona Shelburne, ESPN. This is probably oversimplifying things, but sometimes when teams play against Jokic, you turn him into a scorer, you turn him into a passer, and he controls the game. You only had four assists tonight.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. You know, it's just, that's the untrained eye that says something like that. This guy's an incredible player. You know, twice in two seasons, he's been the best player on this planet. You can't just say, oh, make him a score. That's not how they play. They have so many different actions that just get you compromised. We have to focus on what we do. You know, we try to do things the hard way, and he requires you to do many things the hard way. He has our full respect. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Coach.
So, a little aggressive, probably a little uncalled for. That's Spo, though. I learned that last series. Not the easiest interview. Probably underrated as the hardest interview in the league at the podium. Pre-game, he does not want to talk. I guess he talks in shoot-arounds at the morning. That's what it is. So, you'll see a lot of these clips and these videos, and we posted one during these finals where he just, you know, throws his hands on the table, looks around, no one wants to ask anything, boom, I'm out of here. And I think the guys who cover him day in and day out respect that a little bit. And so I'm there in these finals, and I'm thinking about writing about the zone. People have probably written about it, but I am curious for a defense like Miami's. And again, this is getting into the weeds, what he wanted right there. Rather than just kind of an overarching narrative or one-liner to describe their defensive game plan. I want to get into a little bit how they're initiating actions and, you know, like, are players seeing something from the Celtics that are making them go zone in spots? Are they calling it out from the sideline? They plan to go to it in a quarter? Like, that's something that interested me a little bit before one of these games. And you're going to see the same face you saw in that last video. When I started asking this before, I think it was game 3, I want to say. So, pretty similar result right here that Ramona got for me.
Is it on the, you know, your players to kind of see like, all right, you know, we're going to go to this defensive look if we see this, or are you kind of calling things out from the sideline when it comes to the different looks you're giving them, zones?
I don't know what you're getting at right now, but... my answer is the same one I just answered right there. Yeah, we're all like communicating, and they force you, you know, to communicate quite a bit. Yeah, that's the kind of pressure they can put on your defense. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I didn't get hit as hard there, nearly as hard, but I mean, untrained eye, that's scorching. That's like casual on the next level, which. We know Ramona's not. But man, she got lit up there. And that happens, you know, especially at the Heat after some of these games. Normally you'd expect to happen after a loss, but that's Spoelstra. He's so intense up there. I kind of marvel at it. And I'd love to talk to him one-on-one and I guess a little bit more relaxed setting because, man, he really is going in the battle. He's embodying that whole Heat culture thing you talk about when he's up there and staring guys down and the scowls of that Miami team. They're infamous. Lowry's, Butler's, Bam's is definitely a nastiness that they're trying to exude. And I think the whole operation down there definitely stems from that 90s Riley stuff, which if you lived it, you understand it. I read the book. How much of that is a factor here? I'm sure some of it. They play together, they believe, and there's definitely a buy-in there to these intricacies that you don't see in other places, whether it's multiple levels of actions or all the ball movement that you see from them. Like, that takes a commitment. The defense, the intensity they play out on that, and that takes a commitment that you saw from the Celtics last year, and you didn't really see this year as much. So I think these are the facts on the Heat. Like, is it a culture thing? To some degree, because what they're actually doing schematically on the court, I think, requires a lot of buy-in from NBA players who a lot of the time just want to isolate, who want to run back on defense after they shoot, who don't want to make the second effort after passing or getting off the ball. And, you know, you know where I'm kind of going with all that. So that brings us to the Celtics. And first, I want to give a shout-out to FanDuel. Is the best place to bet on the NBA playoffs as well as the other playoffs going on right now. Baseball in full swing. Watched the Red Sox earlier. It scared me, as did yesterday's play where they're just throwing the ball around the infield and reminded me immediately of the Jaren Duran play last year. So I'm not going to be betting on much baseball, I'll tell you that, particularly the Red Sox. But there's a great championship series going on right now on the hockey side as well. NBA, of course, FanDuel partner, and the best place, the best odds, the best website, the best app. I love the app. So great for information. And right now, if you want the odds, which the Heat came in staggering underdogs to the Nuggets in this series, well, it's getting a little bit tighter now at 1-1. So you can head over there and check out the lines. 2.5-point favorites. Nuggets enter game 3 down there in Miami. As far as the series goes, I'm looking for that right now. Can't pull that up quick enough right now, but that's available over at FanDuel.com. Of course, go to FanDuel.com/Boston for $1,000 no sweat first bet if you haven't signed up yet. Can't beat that. That is a great, great way to start and have no worries at all. So something you're really feeling confident in and something goes awry there, $1,000. I mean, that's good stuff. And I finally found the finals. Nuggets -270, Heat +220. So still not a ton of respect for the Heat, even at game one going home. But it's good value if you believe in the Heat, like I'm starting to a little bit here. FanDuel.com/Boston. Of course, check that out. Download the app. Tell me where you've been. FanDuel.com/Boston. Head over there and check that out. Of course, the official sports book partner of CLNS Media, sports wagering partner of CLNS Media. We'll get to questions in a minute, but I do want to expand a little bit. And I did a video yesterday on the Sam Cassell hiring. Great hire. I think a number of things you like here, and I mentioned them yesterday. Strong relationships with players. It's been talked about that Paul George really viewed him as a mentor, as did Ben Simmons during the Philadelphia years there. So I love that. Point guard. I think that always bodes well in this position. Personality management. I mean, there's some good stories of him getting into James Harden last year that I've heard as well. So a guy who's willing to go with the players. And as Doc Rivers said in a clip that I will actually play right now for you guys since you're here, loves that he can impact both sides of the ball. And here's Doc, who I do respect, who I do like, despite how much of a, I'd say, almost meme he's become for the blown leads and the timeout huddles and everything like that. A defensive coach who's won in this league, who has great pedigree, had a lot of good things to say about Sam Cassell here when he was in Boston for the finals, the East semifinals.
How about this series? But I just want to know, what is it going to take for Sam to get a shot? Because he's been an assistant for so long, and it seems like he's really had an effect on a lot of guards, but he's not really getting that opportunity.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's terrific. He's got an incredible basketball mind. And I wish people can just see the mind. He's a brilliant basketball mind. I love when we have our little meetings, we have our offensive meeting and our defensive meeting. Sam's the only one that goes to both, you know, because he's that valuable. And it's great. You know, I go to both and Sam goes to both. Then we have our offensive group of coaches and our defensive group of coaches. And, he deserves it.
Ringing endorsement. I love it. And in terms of being a head coach, I don't want to go there yet. I didn't want to do it yesterday either. And I know some of you guys will love that I'm going here. But it does give you a little bit of insurance. Things don't go well on the Joe front next year. If there's not improvement, if the struggles continue there, does give you an option if you do need to make a change at some point down the line. Though, unlike a Frank Vogel, unlike a Monty Williams, unlike a Doc Rivers, I don't know who you were dreaming of as a lead assistant, probably big names, probably guys that make Joe look over his shoulder and coach with a little bit more of a pressure, less freedom, almost a feeling of less commitment from the organization. I don't think Cassell, who hasn't been a head coach in this league, puts him in that position as much. So this is what I felt good about if the Celtics were going to bring Mazzulla back, is that if he received the support, which Cassell will certainly provide, if he brings in more defensive-minded coaches to run that end, if he brings in players who can – former players, rather, who can connect with the players on that level, as well as a guy who does have that connection to Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and this organization. That's what I didn't mention yesterday, is maybe those guys actually become a little bit closer to the organization, and Pierce actually recommended Cassell on his podcast, you know, ominously in the days leading up to this. So a great hire. It is. And is this going to solve everything? I still have some reservations, and we'll talk about them later this week, about bringing everything back next year. I have a feeling that that might not be the best move here, but it's only a feeling. We'll get into that in the Garden Report this week. But in terms of reshaping the staff, which is what this team absolutely needed to do, among other things this summer, this is a slam dunk. And I don't want to overstate the impact of an assistant coach here, but they had to get one. They needed one. They got a good one here. So credit where it's due. Beyond that, Jake Fisher threw out that Charles Lee's on their radar. And that doesn't mean they're going to land him. I think it almost seems more likely than not that they don't. This could be a leftover from looking at top assistants, because I think Cassell is going to be the Celtics' top assistant. I think that's why he's here. Lee, is he just going to fit in beneath him? He might have a little bit more pedigree than that. He certainly has the ability to do that on a different team. But does he want to win again? Obviously a 2021 champion. Boston provides him that. Maybe another organization would give him a status as a associate head coach that he can win out of. So if they land him, I mean, it'll be parades over here. It's going to be backflips over here about how this could impact the Celtics, because I love this guy. I've heard so much good stuff about him over the years. I'm not a former player in the NBA sense, but I do think, and I posted this on Twitter earlier, an interview he did with The Athletic in 2022, coming off the championship, talking about trust, getting players to trust and buy into him, earning trust, that kind of stuff. You know, stuff that I think Joe talks about too, but the email element too. What I've learned over the year, there's so many variables, he said, that go into day-to-day process throughout a season. And the thing I keep falling back on is controlling what you can control. Schedule's tough, injuries happen, all this stuff. We just have to be focused and obsessed with controlling what we can control, which is our preparation on a daily basis, our effort levels, and our mental makeup. And that's so important. I think that's the intangible that we keep talking about here, the mental side. If you can get the mental side right, he said, the competitiveness, the physicality, you can win a lot of games. And then the togetherness. How can we come together as a team? How can I, as a head coach or an assistant coach, build relationships, earn trust? I think that's what a lot of Ime did last year. And you see how the team felt that loss at different points, pointed to it at the end of the season. There was a real connection with him that I think Charles Lee would be able to establish as well here. A buy-in. Now, there's still a little bit of a question of, are they buying into Joe at that level? It seems like it, at least based on the regular season. But does that fade at all if they struggle? I mean, it certainly did after game three. Them both talking about disconnect from Mazzulla's perspective as well as the player's perspective. So this is tenuous stuff. Think things are going to be great on the coaching front if they're winning, and things aren't if they lose. And that's the story of this season. But you do want a guys with great experience, great pedigree, great defensive acumen, certainly. And Sam Cassell, Charles Lee would be cornerstones, at least among the guys available and the guys who are realistic as assistants for doing that. So I'm not going to go too deep into this. I know it's exciting a lot of you guys, and I'm thrilled because it's been a week of doom and gloom in Boston, in many ways. But a couple of assistant hires or potential hires here, getting people to buy in and trust again. So I'm thrilled for you. You all deserve a little bit of happiness as the summer gets rolling again. I still think there's some other stuff that needs addressing here, but as I said, we'll get into that on the Garden Report this week. So I want to shout out Athletic Greens, athleticgreens.com/garden. It's 75 vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, probiotics, and more that go right in your cup of water each morning. Boom, shake it up. And throw it back, and you are getting all the vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, probiotics, and more that you need. 75 of them for your body, for your energy. It's a nice tropical flavor as well. When you go over there, there's some cool bottles. I got to bring one of them on the show at one point. Some great containers to store them in. And 5 free travel packs, which is great too. If you're on your summer vacation or whatever it might be, you'll still get your Athletic Greens. People love this. The reviews are through the roof too. So head over to athleticgreens.com/gar and get your year's supply of vitamin D, 5 free travel packs with your first purchase, and support Salinas Media and the Garn Report. Of course, this is Dome Theory. Go subscribe. I love the 200 of you here on the fly. This is my own podcast that goes back to the Bobcast starting in 2016, where I did a lot of themed interviews, learned a lot from some professionals in the field, which was kind of my goal back then. And got some cool guests on too. Like, I remember we had Shea Serrano. We had some really awesome media figures in and around Boston at that time, writers, reporters, athletes from Syracuse. And yes, it does have a Syracuse theme, of course, me loving Syracuse the way I do. We'll talk about Syracuse at times when it's called for. And of course, some of my friends from Syracuse are going to be joining us here as well throughout the week. And we'll do our interview series as well, which I always love getting deeper into some people, not only here at Salinas Media, but, you know, around the NBA world, I'm sure, and outside of sports as well. I, obviously, as all you know, I'm a big music guy, big pop culture guy, big politics guy. There's a lot of interest I have outside of the Celtics and the NBA that I think there's a good platform to, you know, talk about them on. So all that's coming your way. I think we're going to commit to it for real this time. You know, I don't want to be someone that promises something and, you know, doesn't deliver here. And playoffs got a little bit crazy there. I didn't want to jibber jab about all that at the beginning of the show. But we're back. So subscribe. We're on Spotify. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. All the different places you get your podcast, Amazon, wherever. And of course, clnsmedia.com. More stuff coming on that front. I want to take some questions at the end here if anyone want to fire them away. And I'll keep yapping here about the plugs by the end of it. So if any of you want to throw those out there, I'll take a few before we get out of here. But I think I covered all the ground I wanted to on the finals. On the Celtics stuff going on. Jalen, man, I don't know. I don't have a great take for you. I'm so torn on it. I've never been more torn about Jalen Brown's future than I am right now. And obviously, if, you know, it wasn't a Horford jersey up there, it'd be a Jalen jersey. I've been a huge Jalen fan over the years, going back to my years as a fan before I covered the team. And I think he's been a complicated figure to cover. I think he's been a very guarded figure, not only for media, of course, but I think the organization as well. I don't know if they have a great idea of where he stands. So all I'll say is this. It's going to be very interesting how it plays out. And it might just be a slam dunk extension. It might just be kick this into the future. That's probably the most likely answer here. But he could easily say no. Or the Celtics could say, I don't know if we're offering the full max here. There just might be some kind of hurdle they run into that either hesitation on either side could swell into something bigger here. I don't expect that to happen. I think realistically, Brown's going to be back on a $300 million deal, and they'll figure it out into the future. All the comments he made after an emotional game 7, I don't know. A lot of pause there, but it's a tough moment to answer a question like that. I get it. We haven't heard a ton from the team on whether if max offer is coming, which I think is mandatory. So July 1st, I think there'll be a lot of surprises coming. I'm interested to see what leaks or murmurs come out about where both sides stand as far as big men go. I don't think there's a lot of great ones on the market. You know, Thomas Bryant's a guy that they reportedly looked at who will be out there again, possibly. But you have your Mike Muscala, you have your Luke Kornet, of course. And Grant Williams, I think, is your priority as a big to bring back if you can here. But you'll be able to sign and trade him and Pritchard, I think, for a decent big, possibly if Grant signs for too much or you just decide you want to move on from him because you're not playing him most nights. But then, you know, you're going to have your Gallinaris and your Muscalas as well who try to fill in that Grant spot. I think that's going to be how they go about that, given some of the new cap restrictions they're facing here. Brooke Lopez, a little too expensive. He's going to make his money. I hear Houston's in on him reading earlier, and they can pay. So the Celtics, they're limited. You know, mid-level even, I just saw if you use your mid-level, you're capped at the apron. So the Celtics are going to have to figure out this Grant thing before they actually even use that mid-level. And yes, they'll be able to use it if Grant walks. Or maybe even if they bring back, I haven't done the math on it, but enough money that a low enough amount of money that they're still in position to fall below that second apron. I think they're about like 13 to 17 million or so short of that. I think 13 is the number. So they don't have a ton of wiggle room in terms of adding this summer. And you can use some of these pieces to trade if you want. I know people are warming up to the idea of moving Brogdon. I'm not. You got him for Tice and Nesmith, so what are you theoretically going to get for him? I think the greatest value is in keeping him still. But we'll talk about all that. Yeah. This has been Dome Theory. I'm Bobby Manning, CLNS Media. Thanks so much, all 200 of you, for joining. That's exactly what I was looking for here for a return on the fly. Appreciate all you. Appreciate the love as always. We're going to talk about the year that was on the beat this year. I want to get into that a little bit tonight, but I want to have some memories and stuff lined up, some stories for you guys, and we'll do all that. We'll be back on Wednesday after the game, game three. Enjoy that. And we'll be back sometime this week on the Garn Report as well. Plan a show, plan an interview. So appreciate you guys, and I will talk to you later this week.